All right, hi, so my name's Andy Bissett.
I'm James Allen.
And this is the Ball Chat Sports Podcast. Right, so Sam, Jim, welcome to another... Well, not you welcome. Welcome to the people listening.
Yeah, you're welcome into your house, not to the podcast.
Yeah, welcome to another Piss Up at Bissett's.
Day drinking and podcasting.
Yeah.
Living the dream. Sweet.
So we're gonna start this episode off with something slightly different, because we had a chat last week about, and we tried to be quite... objective about, you know, how the podcast is going and sort of like the structure of it and stuff. So we're actually going to start with sort of an intro lead into the five things you might have missed.
It's a pre-segment segment.
And we've got a new segment, which is basically we're just going to ask each other five really hard questions, sport-related quiz questions. And we should have some sort of forfeit as well, like... So if I'm gonna give you five very tough questions today.
Okay.
If you manage to get one this week and I manage to beat you next week,
okay,
you're gonna have to like down something.
I like that, and I also like the fact that neither of us have played rugby, because you know that would involve like drinking something out of someone's arse crack,
downing a goldfish or something.
Which is something obscene. Which you know, it's just gonna be like drink something mildly tasty, isn't it? Sweet.
So just down a rum, which you do on the regs anyway. So.
Yeah, classic, man.
So the discussion topic today to lead us in is going to be what is the great... So this was something on TalkSport that they had during the week. And, you know, it came up quite a lot. So it was like, what is the greatest comparative sporting achievement? So I mean that by, you know, a nine dart or like a 147 in snooker or a hole in one in golf. What is the most accomplished sort of... sporting achievement you can do in any sport?
In any sport, well, just from the three examples you've used there, a nine dart finish is like two rounds of treble 20s, all your darts, and then there's like three ways to finish.
And then a checkout, a three dart checkout.
That is pretty difficult to do, man.
I mean, you look at the conditions of dart, though. Conditions of dart are very... obviously, you're in a nice, like, air-conditioned room.
Well, in
darts... You haven't really got any external influences.
Well, in darts, it's... Especially if you're playing competitive darts, it's quite a chaotic environment, man. It's like da-da-da-da-da every time you hit a dart, and then like people getting smashed off their heads, people dressed like Vikings and like probably glassing each other as well. In the snooker, it is a sterile environment, man. You can't even like stand near where the pocket is where you're going to shoot. You can't cough at the wrong time.
Oh, no, you don't get any interference from the audience, anything like that either, do you? So... I personally think hole-in-ones in golf are very, very difficult to accomplish.
And they're rare as well. You would characterise that as more of a fluke, wouldn't you? Because there's like wind conditions. Then just getting off the tee with any kind of consistency is so difficult. You could work yourself up to a 147 in snooker if you've got a table at home, or a 9-dart finish if you've got a darts board. But I think a hole-in-one is the most difficult one. I have those three examples.
And there's a couple more that come to my mind. There's also the perfect hat-trick in footy, which is right foot, left foot and a header. Which, you know, doesn't happen that often either. I mean, hat tricks don't happen unless you're Cristiano Ronaldo and you scored like 57 in your career. But they don't really come along that often, do they? But what about, and this is what led to the discussion this week on TalkSport, what about a hat trick in cricket, which is three wickets in three consecutive balls?
If they're talking about it as this rare occurrence, I'd have to take your word for it. I just haven't watched that much cricket. We're going to talk about cricket in a little bit, but I had to do like a couple of Google searches and like get familiar with all the terms and stuff. It wouldn't jump to my mind.
Obviously, you're looking to get 10 wickets out in an innings. It's quite common for a bowler to get three wickets in his game, like during that innings. But very rarely will you get like back-to-back, because obviously there's so many balls being bowled. But there was a good point that someone brought up, was the fact that in cricket, when you're getting a hat-trick, and in football, the fact that you're achieving is based on the quality of the opposition. Whereas in golf, it's just you against the environment, basically, isn't it?
It's
a bit of a different challenge. And I suppose 9-dart and 147, it's just all about consistency, really. And snooker, I think a little bit, you can you know, get a bit of luck off certain shots, but I think technically snooker's a very difficult sport.
If you bagged a hat-trick against either England or Italy in this year's Euros, that you'd be doing a good job there, because they were the two best defensive teams. But if you bang like four in against, you know, who are one of the worst teams? North Macedonia. Counts for less than, even though it doesn't count for less in the points and all that, but in terms of prestige and perception, it does count for more, doesn't it?
I suppose when they put the statistics down, they don't really put them, like Messi's goal tally doesn't go down against, all right, he scored 47 goals in his career against Granada.
Yeah,
you know, at the end of the day, it gets put against his record no matter what. Let us know on social media or whatever what you think is the greatest comparative sporting achievement that any player can get. All right, so that leads on to the five things you might miss, which was, we're going to start off with one that's quite close to home this week. Respected referee Keith Bruce has retired from officiating after over half a century in basketball. The 72-year-old has called time on a decorated and lengthy career, which includes 16 years as a FIBA ref. This is significant as he's the father of an old school friend of ours, Lizzie Bruce, who will almost certainly never listen to this podcast.
Yeah, our friend and yours, Lizzie Bruce. How you doing, Liz?
Yeah. So if you ever listen to this, big up your dad. So big up Big Keith. So he's reffed on the big occasion in Sky Sports. You know, matches that have been on Sky Sports in front of 10,000 people in the past. So quite a career, and fair play to Keith.
I'm surprised this didn't come up more prominently in school. Like, this is something you hear, isn't it? Like, you know, everyone's always spreading rumours about each other and passing tidbits of info. I never heard this until you told me last week.
I do not remember it, and, like, I've met him on a handful of occasions, well, quite a lot of occasions back in the day. I do not remember him ever being a basketball ref. I do remember him being very stern, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was a man of principles.
The nature of your friendship with his daughter in year seven. You know, it was all innocent, wasn't it?
You know, we never really got on that well, but, you know.
Yeah, Nat McKinn's dad hated me as well, it sounds.
Hope you had a good retirement. Moving on to number two. Manchester United dispute with the game Football Manager and Sega over the use of their naming rights and a generic logo that was used. So they're going to be renamed Manchester UFC for this year's game.
Oh, so many more copyright issues there.
Which I feel like they're just going from like out of the frying pan into the fire, aren't they?
Definitely.
So like I think it's slightly strange, and they've sued Sega. So after 16 years of using their likeness in the game, this is the year that Man United representatives decided that they need to whip up some cash from somewhere. Oh, we're gonna have to open up those disciplinary proceedings and.
The Glazers must be a bit hard up for cash after that bad Pogba deal. They're getting ready to like ameliorate. We've getting to get rid of him to PSG this year. But no, that doesn't make any sense. Surely they would have been aware of that. So like, think about the reason people refer to United as the biggest club in the world, rightly or wrongly, is because of their commercial appeal. Now imagine what their lawyers are like in terms of the image and usage and anything to do with Manchester United. Imagine how on top they are, and they're only just doing it now. Football managers like a staple thing, like people get their actual tactics off that game, so weird timing.
Well, I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the Manchester United coach, he's come out and he said that he's learnt a few things from Football Manager and he plays it, and he's taught him things.
Your man scored a winner in a Champions League final, do you know what I mean? Absolutely killing it.
So, I don't know, I can just imagine like the Sega representatives, like how many years they've been going to like United and say like, is this year going to be the year that we're going to get the rights off you for a decent price? And they're like, nah, you need to give us like.
So they carried on using some generic thing. This is, there's no way they weren't aware of this beforehand. Yeah. Absolutely no way.
Right, so number three, a shithouse alert in the men's marathon. So French runner Morhad Amdouni last week during his marathon run, toppled a row of water bottles during the 26-mile event before taking down the last one. Did you see this video?
No.
So, like, he's come out on Twitter. So he's broke his silence on Twitter. And he said that he couldn't pick up one of the bottles because they were slippery. Because apparently they've got them in, like, obviously, like coolers, barrels, big coolers with, like, ice and water. And they take them out and then they place them on the table. So when the marathon runners are running past, they can nab one. His geezer, he started at the front and he must have knocked about 20 bottles of water and then he grabbed the last one at the end.
What a legend, man, to be fair to him. You gotta be doing that, man. It's everything
that's,
goes.
It's the sort of tactics you gotta deploy when you're trying to like win, you know, such a physical endeavour as the marathon. So obviously this race was ultimately won by a Kenyan, Eliud Kipchoge. So we spoke about the dominance in the sort of like long distance running by the Kenyans, and yet again, our man Shithouse finished in 14th.
I'm surprised he didn't blame some kind of like mental health struggle or something for why he did that. Do you know what I mean?
Constant oppression from the Kenyans.
Yeah, but like even this number four, like the world's a bizarre place, and it's changing in front of my eyes, and it's disconcerting. So I learned this week that professional paintballing is a thing, and player Jessica Miaolo has been fired from Team USA after posting an insensitive TikTok She filmed herself watching a news segment of a 17-year-old COVID sufferer whose mum was saying she wished he got the vaccine sooner. And Jessica Miaola reportedly said in response, "Mam, your kid does not need a COVID shot. Your kid needs a fucking treadmill." So I'm assuming he's a big boy. But I wouldn't know because I can't find the actual TikTok anywhere. The post sparked the usual cycle of outrage, apologies and public statements that we've all got used to by now. And I'm still not sure if it even happened. So for me, this story encapsulates the way everything of interest in the public domain is now handled. It's absolutely dead. Like, how many people would have seen that video on a professional paintballer's TikTok account if the news didn't get hold of it and show it to us all?
Why, who would have known about professional paintballing?
Like, I'm so glad it exists. It's great.
It's that sounds amazing. I'm gonna have to try and find that online, like some videos of that, like professional paintballing. That must be wicked, man.
Yeah, but painful, man. Like those blue and black bruises all up and down your rib cage, man. I only went paintballing.
Must be good
once.
To watch though, if they get the sort of like camera angles right.
Yeah, in the same way as Jackass was good to watch, like watching people suffer. But look, I think if this is like such an offence in terms of society and the way we're supposed to treat people, why don't any of the news outlets post a video and let us make up our own mind? It's all, everything, I went on to 4 or 5 different news sites and all of it was just descriptions and they were all basically the same.
It's not like she's done something like heinous. Yeah. Is it like something grossly insensitive? She's just basically, I mean, she probably could have not swore.
Like, yeah, but even that's just a matter effective. Of taste. That's just a matter of taste, isn't it? Like profanity and all that. Some people really are picky about it and other people don't care. But say if he is overweight, and again, I'd have to see a picture of him. They say, even the conventional side of it, the experts, quote unquote, say that obesity exacerbates COVID.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
She's just making the point that, you know what I mean, you could be helping yourself here by not being so overweight, even though she communicated it in a rather insensitive way.
And isn't it funny that, you know, it depends on your profession, because if a comedian would have said that, people would have been like, oh, look at that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But again, I need to see the video. Yeah. You don't get the feel for it until, but yeah, I'll try and track it down for next week.
Yeah.
Well, for number 5, a final word from Tokyo 2020 after the closing ceremony last week. Now, this year's Olympics were the first to showcase karate, and in the gold medal match, the officials absolutely shit the bed. So Saudi Arabia's Tareq Hamadi was 4-1 up against Iran's Sajjad Ganjzada in the final match. Sajjad launched a southpaw left hand, bringing his head off the centre line and down to the right. Unfortunately for him, Hamadi flicked up a left kick to the point of his chin to send him flat on his back, out cold. The officials then put their heads together and disqualified Hamadi for what they deemed an accumulation of violations, called Hansoku in the nomenclature of the sport. Sajjad's team then gave him a quick going over with the magic sponge, and about 20 minutes after being knocked unconscious in a match he was losing, he stood on top of the podium, biting the gold medal hanging around his neck. They should have given him a chocolate one as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely scored, knocked out cold, and for some peculiar technicality, he wins gold. Oh, the Saudi Arabian must have been absolutely flipping about.
Just because he knocked him out, basically, isn't it? It seems
it's like,
excessive
force, but like we spoke before about the taekwondo and the boxing, and like how it's a bit like worse to watch. And this wasn't even, it wasn't as if he ran forward and blasted him with a kick. It was a reaction. It was a counter kick. It was just perfect timing and perfect placement. It was the perfect expression of karate.
But what I don't understand with these sort of like the combat sports in the Olympics is it does seem to be going down this like path of you can do the actions of the sport, but there can't actually be, you know, the physical like attrition from it or whatever.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
So there's no sort of like, oh, you can't punch him too hard. Like you can do the action, but you can't punch him too hard. Or
it's weird, man. Like these are they don't draw the same line with the sprinters. Like don't be running too fast. Don't have combat sports in the Olympics if you're not going to let them.
Bin
like,
it off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Bin it off, and we'll stick to UFC and boxing.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so we'll move on to the sort of general sports chat. So we've been talking about the you know, the success of the 100, which is obviously a new format of cricket where they're trying to basically reinvigorate the sport in terms of the men's and the women's game. Just trying to get more people on seats, more eyes on tellies. It's actually now on it's on BBC, so you can watch it on terrestrial TV. So I watched the game last night and I was absolutely, you know, blown away by it, to be honest. I have liked watching cricket in the past. I've always, you know, sometimes I'll sit down and watch the Ashes, like, obviously, that's the long form of the game. That's the kind of what this is trying to be the antidote for, is like the kind of, you know, the traditional old school sort of like cricket fan.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm not sitting down and spending a week watching a cricket game. It's not happening. I'm probably too far past the point of no return, really. Cricket wasn't part of my life growing up. But if there are some people on the brink that might be interested in cricket if we weren't so long. And I think this is what this format addresses, as you're going to say.
Yeah, and I think it is. And it's bringing new, fresh fans into the building that have never been to one before. They've got like a band on and they have like sort of like the announcer being a bit more sort of like, oh, now coming up, Moeen Ali, Birmingham's own Moeen Ali.
You got to give it the Bruce Buffer, man. Get people hyped.
Yeah, no, it is, man. If they had a Bruce Buffer type, I reckon it'd be like, I reckon it'd be next level.
I didn't even understand the difference when you told me about this. So the 100 ball format should shorten matches to about 2.5 hours, which the England and Wales Cricket Board hope will attract a younger generation of fans to the sport.
And I think the main thing about that is they're getting the women's and the men's game. Basically, I think women's cricket, like women's domestic cricket, was based on its arse financially.
Yeah.
Like there was just no way.
Yeah, I don't doubt it, to be fair.
There was no way of attracting new fans. They weren't attracting new sponsors. So I think that this accumulation, it's only about a month long, isn't it, the season? I think it's coming to the end of the tournament as such. I think there's about 8 teams in each group, but it's looking like that it's going to do more for the women's game than it is for the men's.
Well, that's something I didn't even consider, to be fair. I was just thinking more about the specific changes of rule, like the shorter formats, like, and the power play. That's the most interesting one, where they put fielding restrictions over the first 25 balls.
Yeah, they have that in T20 as well.
Yeah, and
I think in one day international. Basically, there's four formats. There's Test cricket, which is your 5-day format, two innings each, and you bowl as much as you want until you get the 10 men out. And then you got the one-day international, which is what it says on the tin, where it's like they make sure that both innings are played within that day. And then you got T20, which is 20 overs, so 20 times 6, which is what, 180 balls?
20 times, no, it's 120, I think.
120 balls, yeah. So this is 20 balls shorter, hence what's called the 100.
I was finding that there were a lot of comparable rules to 2020. So now if that's the only major difference, 20 shorter balls. Or 20 less balls.
Format-wise, for me, that feels like it's the only difference. Okay. But I think it's a difference in vibe, man. Like, I've been looking at the crowds and stuff, and just even the way the commentators are, like, they're so much more relaxed. They'll just sort of, like, chat about random shit. Like, when the game's going on, it feels like a bit more of a party atmosphere. And I think they're trying to sort of, like, really modernise the sport, which I think's brilliant, man.
So is this more of a presentational adjustment rather than a drastic upheaval of the rules?
Absolutely. Even like the user interface on BBC, it's like I can't remember a time where BBC have dominated sport as much as they have in the last month in terms of like the Olympics, and at the same time with this the 100 tournament going on. I've watched more sport on BBC in the last month than I have in the last sort of like 5 years.
Well, I'm glad the interface on iPlayer is better for the cricket, because for the Olympics it was just shocking, man. I don't know what, obviously it's probably due to the rights, we've spoke about that before, but they just cut from event to event almost arbitrarily, and then you have to kind of scroll through the videos to find stuff. And back in Rio 2016, you could just find every event individually. They'd have 8 screens and you could pick from one to the other whenever you wanted. It was so simple. And then when nothing was going on one screen, you just see like an empty mat or an empty arena, which is fine.
So you know that it's kind of like the coverage is ended. I think they've lost that a lot on a lot of the rights for the sports, haven't they?
I think Discovery got them random. Like, yeah. They must put a bomb up for that. But yeah, well, I'm glad that it's working for the 100 and the cricket anyway, because that's only going to help like the nippers and that get into it, really.
Yeah, and you know, we were sort of like, we were going over some of the ideas that how this could reinvigorate other sports. Well, obviously, football doesn't need reinvigorating, but I think the women game could certainly do with a boost in terms of like popularity and sponsors.
If it is more of a presentational change, would you make any adjustments to the women's game in football?
From a presentational standpoint, not really, no. But I think
what would you do to the game?
I would have the women's game, so Birmingham women versus Coventry women or whatever. I would have that game on before the men's game.
Not a bad shout.
So
like an undercard.
So an undercard, exactly. So you know, you couldn't really. The thing is, you couldn't change the time, so you couldn't make it shorter games. So
you could.
Football's an hour and a half plus 15 minutes.
In women's boxing, and women's professional boxing, they have 2-minute rounds. You could definitely. But what about a smaller pitch?
Nah, because how would you shorten the pitch? You'd have to have two.
You have to shrink it from all sides, like on.
Or you just have to. You'd have your lines built out, but that'd be a bit confusing for the men's.
I don't know. Well, I
feel like there is an avenue for it, man, and I think that would be massive. Obviously, you wouldn't get everybody that's got a ticket to the men's game. They wouldn't show up. You know, even if it was Man United versus Arsenal women, Like you wouldn't have all the people show up for the women's game, but there would be a certain percentage that would be interested in going to watch both. And I think it really would boost interest. Like
turn it into a family thing, you know, because if you and your missus go and you've got, say, two daughters and you want to watch the football, but you don't want to deaf your kids off on a Saturday morning, you can go down for the early kickoff at, say, 10. Watch the game with all the women in your family. They get to see some positive sporting role models. You'll get a bit hyped as well because your kids are getting hyped and you'll get excited by the game. Then you can either go with them or just stay on to the 1 o'clock kickoff, isn't it?
Because I feel like football, if you go down St Andrews, like I've been down, like obviously I haven't been down for a few years now, obviously because of COVID.
Slack fan.
You go down St Andrews, right? It is a bit like being at church, man. Like it can be like a sort of like a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff against Millwall. And it's like 0-0 for like the first 75 minutes. It can get to the point where it feels a bit lethargic and like there's not really much energy there.
But also, it's in a rough part of town and there are a lot of Blues games where violence erupts outside the club or the ground. So, and that goes for a lot of clubs up and down the country. So if you want to have a family-friendly event directly preceding, say like a Blues Millwall fixture or something, it's not going to work, man.
Nah, because there's going to be too many Wolves, because you know there's going to be trouble.
Yeah, and there's going to be too many people who've been in the pub since 9 o'clock on the boosters. They've had about 10 cans already, and it's just it's a clash of philosophies and vibes, man. So that would be something you'd have to address more, I think, if you're going to schedule the games closer together.
I think it's virtually impossible to change like a footballing culture like that quickly, isn't it? So it'd have to be a completely different format, like the 100 doing. Yeah. It'd have to be like, but there's no time off in football. Yeah. It's like 9 months, like we spoke about last week.
I think a smaller pitch in that would help, man, because like the way, obviously there are documented differences in terms of speed and power.
Or even like seven aside. So no. Blues seven aside, something like that.
It could still be 11 aside, but like there's a reason, except for like the mixed 4 100 meter relay, you don't really see men and women competing against each other or the equivalent event in the pool in the Olympics. A shorter, smaller pitch, I think, would add to a quicker game with players who are less strong and quick.
I think you'd have to knock off a few of the numbers. Though.
Maybe.
For the women's game, I don't know, maybe. Maybe you could argue that the men's game is probably a lot more physical and played at a higher tempo. So potentially it could work into the hands of like making the women's game more interesting, potentially.
I think smaller goals as well. How many times in women's football do you just see the keepers are just not big enough for the goal? It's nothing against women. Women just tend to be smaller than men. And the men, professional athletes who are in goal, they're monsters. What about Italy's keeper? Your man would spread his arms. He could touch like either post. You know what I mean? There's no women I've seen in professional football who are like that size. And then like they're at a clear. It's like watching an 11-year-old kid playing in full size goals. So it's like there are some adjustments you can make to make it a bit more palatable. You know.
Well, there you go. So some teams have huge squads where you know there's players that don't get many minutes. Start up a new tournament like Friday nights, 8-a-side, do the women's and the men's all in 3 or 4 hours on a Friday night. The reserve, people get a chance to see the reserve team players that don't really get a chance. The women's game can just, you know, they can play their whoever they want, basically same thing again. And that'd be like the sort of like family alternative to going down, perhaps where, you know, women, you know, or whoever is not really interested in the sort of like, you know, all the sort of like jeering and the sort of like offensive sort of aggression that and pent up aggression that you see down the football sometimes. If people aren't interested in that, maybe they go to this new format on a Friday night.
And it'd be a nice little money spinner for the clubs, man. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So a nice little revenue. Should we
put a proposal together?
Yeah, let's do it, man. You'll have to be the front man though. Definitely, because you know how to speak to people. When we're not football, man. I'll just be mumbling into my lap thinking, when can I get my next drink?
So the last one I was thinking was golf, because that's a little bit like cricket, because it's a four day thing and it's on all day from like 6:30 to like 5:30.
It's a wound of that is, you know.
You know, if I want to sit, I love it, to be fair. I can sit down and watch the Masters like for 4 days, no problem, man. But there's a lot of people that probably don't want to invest that much time into watching a sport.
Absolutely not. I would never do that, man.
What about like a golf 2020? So like short, like maybe like less holes or like some sort of like knockout format. You have two golfers against each other per round. So they go out together and 9 holes. Whoever wins 5 holes, first of 5 holes wins, they go through to a knockout stage.
Yeah, nice. That's
something
super.
Like that. You
or
know
like
I mean?
The first one, or you could like punish bad performance. Like the first guy to go plus 10 or plus 5 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So if you go to plus 5, you immediately get knocked out. Yeah, something like that. You could either, you know, and there is something like this. There's the Ryder Cup, which is like, which is America versus like Europe.
Full of riders, yeah.
Yeah. So they basically do something similar. So it is match play. So like they'll play against each other. So, but that's really interesting, man. And that sort of like really gets people's juices flowing. So I think a golf is another sport where there's potential. There's a lot of potential in sport for different formats that can, you know, you can try and tap into a different audience. And I don't know why people aren't doing more things like the 100 are doing.
Well, think about how lucrative golf is as well. I imagine how more lucrative it would be if you could get this, like, you know, because we're our generation and the generations that are to follow us, we've just got short attention spans, man.
Exactly.
It's just a legacy of the internet. Like, my attention span now is probably shorter than when I was about 12. Now, you explain that to me, man. It's the internet and, you know, substance abuse. But, you know, it's one of to get people interested, you have to refresh things after a while. Like, to me, golf, cricket, even tennis, even though I'm a closet fan, there's something a bit, like, musty about them. They need a bit of a revamp. Not like on a sports-wide level, but definitely some innovation somewhere.
Yeah, we're not talking about, like, getting rid of the old fans. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, just completely cut them off from society or the older generation.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Eugenics.
Whoa! Hello. Usually we save that till after the podcast, man. Me and Visit start like scoping out each other's heads.
All right, so we're going to move on to the footy and transfer chat, which is basically going to be like 90% Messi, 10% everyone else.
Well, what can you say, man? It's the end. It is literally, I don't even like the phrase, but it is the end of an era, 100%. Think about the goals the man scored, not just the quantity, but the quality. Trophies he's won, the philosophical approaches to the game under managers like Pep Guardiola, like Frank Rijkaard. Who's the other boy that was in there? Tito Villanova. He played for him as well, didn't he?
I imagine he's played for about eight or nine coaches because they've had loads of little ones in the past, haven't they?
That Barcelona team that started with like the Champions League win over Arsenal in 2006, up till probably about 2 or 3 years ago, it's probably like the best European team I've ever seen. Like, unreal. When Xavi and Iniesta and the boys were there, and Puyol and Pique, and like, come on, man.
Yeah, Busquets. That brings Eto'o to a point. Obviously, he's the most technically gifted football player of our generation. Potentially going to be regarded as the most technically gifted player of all time. However, he has played in a lot of very, very good Barcelona teams. Like, you know what I mean? That midfield, you're going back to Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets. It's just got pure dominance in that midfield. You know what I mean? And like pure creativity. So it gives him an opportunity. You know, and he's playing those teams where he could flourish, really. Obviously, you've gone on to talk about the sort of like the financial future of Barcelona and club president Juan Laporta.
Yeah, he was saying that basically he wanted Messi to stay, but the salary cap that's now in play in the Spanish league wouldn't enable him to keep Messi on without financially jeopardising the club. And you don't think that holds any sway at all, do you?
Yeah, and I think Juan Laporta came out and he said something like, you know, something along the lines of, I'm pretty sure it's him, he said something along the lines of, no player is bigger than the club at Barcelona, kind of thing. So, I mean, to me, that sounds like a cop-out. It sounds like garbage to me.
You know what, man? I actually thought that's a difficult line to take when you're dealing with a player like Messi who's become synonymous with Barcelona.
He's more, a legend, yeah. I mean,
more than any other player, but
in the most sense of the word.
That line, the club is bigger than all he is. I liked it, man. I don't know if it's true. I don't know if it's the actual reason why. There could be loads of things in play that we're not getting exposed to. But to me, I thought that was a healthy approach. Do you know what I mean? Because he's like 33, 34 now as well. He wouldn't have been saying that when he was 27. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no way. I mean, supposedly, even if Messi would have played for free, they would have still been off target by their sustainable wage regulations by 25%. So they wouldn't have been hitting FFP regulations.
That's all smoke and mirrors anyway, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? They're bribing Peter to pay Paul, all that nonsense. Like, so you can't really take what they're saying as granted.
I mean, yeah, this is down to players like Antoine Griezmann, who's taken home 600k a week, supposedly.
Jesus.
Because I think they have to release the data just because of the way that the Spanish league works and then their financial counterparts. Coutinho on around 400k a week. And he's been absolutely shite. And then they've even got bit part players like Miralem Pjanic picking up around 270k. They've got Umtiti on about 210, and he got a lot of flack from the fans getting booed. And I think if Pjanic was playing, I'm not sure if he was, but I think if he will be playing, he will get booed as well by the fans.
Yeah, they won't be feeling that much. Well, to be fair, it's not the players' fault. Do you know what I mean? Barca, they've negotiated themselves into this situation, so I don't know, man.
It comes down to the bad management of the club, and like I think the general gripe has been that Spain's financial fair play rules are too strict. In what realm can paying that calibre of players, not even the best in the world, be considered strict? Barcelona's wage bill prior to Messi's contract ending for the year 2021 was £238,500,000.
Where do they recoup
his wage bill for 1 year, man? That's their total team wage bill.
And that's not to say nothing about the operational costs of running a team and a club, a global brand like Barcelona. How is that sustainable, man? Like,
it's not.
Again, to be fair, man, we're not privy to their books, are we? They could have 500 mil coming in next year, but from the way they're going on with Messi, they obviously don't. Like they're starting to think they have to be very careful about how they pay players. I don't think you'll be seeing. Look, Coutinho was a sick player back in the day. It was unreal, but injury struck, you know, inconsistent, in and out of the team. You know what I mean? It's like you can't be playing lads like that. It's like the Real Madrid with Bale. He's collecting 600 bags, sitting on his ass.
Yeah, elite footballers, like they have got it hard, to be honest. Like not in terms of like they haven't got it hard in terms of like having to live. Like their quality of life. Yeah. But I mean, in terms of keeping up their elite standards of performance.
Oh, definitely.
Like it's very difficult because going from a different country, different culture, different footballing philosophy, a team that plays in a different way, a team that has players, you know, a manager that has favourites. Like there's so many external factors that go into being able to keep like that level of performance high. And this is why it's, you know, a slight bit of a risk for Messi going to PSG, but in a way, he's gone to a team that are basically tailor-made to win a Champions League.
Well, PSG, they didn't even win the league last year, did they?
No, they got pipped by, was it Lille?
Do you know what I mean? So Renato, I think
Renato Sanchez, who's a player that I can't believe no one is talking about signing Renato Sanchez. If I was Arsenal, get your hand in your pocket, man. Get your wallet out.
You know what doesn't make sense about your approach there? Your logic is flawed because you're thinking as a sane and rational human being. And Arsenal's transfer policy for the past 15 years has been crazy. And I hate saying that word. I'm going to run that back.
But we digress. But we digress.
We digress.
Basically, these FFP measures. So prior to the start of each season, each club. So for those that perhaps aren't privy to sort of like FFP, especially, you know, if you're listening in sort of like America, you've got your own sort of like financial models with like wage caps because they have their own way of dealing with, you know, making clubs sustainable. But it's a completely different sort of like complexity, you know. So essentially at the start of each season in the Spanish league, each club will gather sort of their financial data, give it to these experts, I would assume, are hired by the league to calculate what would be considered sustainable budgets to set based on the previous year's income, transfer fees received, previous year's wage bills, all that. So these figures can only in theory be changed by releasing players from their contracts or selling players, or in the case of like Coutinho and Dembele agreeing to take wage cuts.
Oh yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And I'm being funny, but if you're a fan, right, I don't care how self-entitled you are, Barcelona fans, you can't boo a player for accepting a contract, work contract.
Definitely.
A business has come to him and he said, I want to make you an employee. I want to pay you this much. And then 2 years down the line, when you want to keep Starboy, when you want to keep Golden Boy, come out and say to him, oh, is it all right if you take a 50% wage? You know that 210K I was giving you a week? Can you drop that down to 110? Is that all right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then boo the geezer when he says no. He's got every right. Samuel Umtiti and Miralem Pjanic or whoever else was asked to take wage cuts. He has got every right to provide for his family, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got a mortgage. You don't know anything about this geezer.
He
could be losing money. That geezer could have a mortgage. He could have three yachts. He could have a mortgage, and he could have like loan back payments.
You know what's funny about that? That's like the perpetuation of the same poor financial decisions that Barcelona themselves are making. So it'd be very fitting if you did have three yachts and a mortgage to pay in 20 cousins who's never met before that just showed up at his front door.
But it just seems like the repercussions of decisions made by Pep Bartomeu are just like rearing their ugly heads, aren't they?
They're not the only club to just write basically blank checks and say, look, put what you want there and we'll pay you because we're Barcelona and we're going to win Champions Leagues and we're going to win leagues and this business is bigger. Like it's kind of like the two sides of the same coin, isn't it? They think they're almost too big to fail. And people thought that about the economy, like every 15 years, and it keeps crashing, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean? You can't keep making financially irresponsible decisions and expect to not suffer the consequences.
And on the topic of financially irresponsible decisions,
yeah.
Let's talk about PSG's actual decision to sign Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
When they've already got Neymar on their books, Mbappe in their books, they've just signed Wijnaldum, they've just signed Sergio Ramos, they've got Donnarumma on the books. Like, Ashraf Hakimi they've signed for a large amount and probably paying him. I would love to see their books, man.
Do they not have to publish the stats the same way Barcelona do?
I don't think it's the financial fair play regulations are nowhere near the same. And how is that fair, man? How is that fair?
Well,
has football really become that capitalist? It's getting like the fucking boxing, man, and like it's just a wild west, man.
Yeah, maybe this is why it doesn't surprise me so much, because I'm so used to reading about in boxing. It'd be like, yeah, you can have $3 million in a contract, or I can give you $200,000 in cash right now. What do you want? And it's like some actual like mafia shit going down. To me, doc, these are all gangsters in suits, as far as I'm concerned, man.
Criminals.
They're just cutting deals with each other, and just because they got a chauffeur-driven Bentley to the arena. And they're drinking in the presidential box. Look, they're just standard criminals who know how to make as much money as possible. That's what this is.
I'm going to dig Messi more out in a minute, but like sticking with the clubs. Like, look at Lille, for example. They won the league last year. Picked PSG. Who should... Like,
should have walked it, man.
Like, they've got no right to not win that title. The amount of money that's been pumped into that club over the past like 10 years, like the Qatari ownership and the fact that like he's best buddies, like he owns beIN Sports, doesn't he? And he's best buddies with someone on the UEFA board.
Yeah.
It's just filthy, mate. It's rife.
He's got the whole link up.
But remember
the Galacticos back in the day. They only won like two leagues and a Champions League. Yeah, look how much money they pumped into that squad, man. Beckham, like, Ronaldo, Figo. Zidane, yeah, Roberto, yeah. Carlo. Come on, man. This has been going on. This has been going on for time.
It's just a new era, isn't it? It's just a new era of just like... it just makes me sick, though, man.
Because you believe in the purity of sports, and I just think everyone's a scumbag. So, like, I'm not surprised that he's gone to PSG, because that is it's probably the most lucrative move for him. Because it's not just him making the decisions. He's got advisors, agents, lawyers... All these people around him, depending on the bag, they all need their own little slice of the pie, man.
Ah, of course you do, man. A worm tongue, screaming worm tongues in people's ear, like,
yeah. Oh, man, for this reason.
The world's full of them. I'm telling you, never underestimate the worm tongue. I suppose,
you know, like, the more money that you accumulate, like, the worm tongues come with you, man.
yeah, definitely. And like, more and more, they bring more with them.
They just multiply. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's disgusting, man. These actually are cretins, man, rats. But, like... Lionel Messi, for me, he could have cemented his legacy. If he would have gone somewhere like, even Man United strikes me, because they could do with a win, like either in the league or in the Champions League. If he would have gone somewhere that needed a little helping hand.
Messi in the Premier League on any level for any team would have been what I wanted. Even if he went to City. I know that's probably the safest move he could have went to in the Premier League, but that still would have been, what a novelty to see Messi in the Premier League, you know what I mean?
But he's gone there just to play, what, 12 Champions League games, basically, because who cares about Ligue 1? Like PSG are going to win Ligue 1 this season, like, no matter what. They don't need Messi. They've already got Mbappe. But to be fair, Neymar's a bit of a
circus juggler, isn't he, Neymar?
But they have made some great signings. I think Sergio Ramos is going to be a massive boost. Donnarumma is like the best goalkeeper in the world, and he's only 22. And they've still got good squad players as well. But for me, I just think he's diluting his legacy a bit going there.
Nah, no way, man. His legacy is set in stone. There's no one touching that, man. That what he's done at Barca, you say what you want about his international career, what he should have done, what he could have done, what he was like in his prime. Just watch a Messi highlight video. That's all you've got to do.
He's incredible. No, I'm not talking about his technical skills set in stone.
I'm not just talking about his technique either. I'm talking about the teams he scored against, the league, the trophy cabinet. Look at what him and Barca did to United in 2011, when United were still United.
Yeah, being 3-1 Wembley, wasn't it?
Made them look like they didn't belong on the park, man. You tell me. And he was the best player in that team for a long time. They were sick. This is an unfortunate thing to have happened, because I think a lot of us, myself included, would have envisaged him finishing his career at Barca, and it's just this weird little stapled on bit at the end.
Yeah, but it's just the greed, man. It's the absolute like inconsummate greed of, like, you know, the whole football in general, man.
Oh yeah.
But the whole all the machinations of it is just like it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth, man.
Yeah, I agree with that, but it's the way it is. You're not turning this back. Too many people are getting too rich off it.
Yeah, there's going to be a crash though, man. There's going to be some sort of like economic crash in football.
This is like
wishful thinking. There's going to be a judgment day, man. I'm telling you.
The four horses of the apocalypse.
Yeah, you know what I mean. and then four horses are going to emerge from this mist. Hopefully, one of them's going to be Birmingham City.
No, that's not happening. Because like, but look, it's, the greed's not ending. Look what. Okay, think about this. Romelu Lukaku, he's going back to Chelsea now for how much? 115 million. They sold him for 28 million to Everton back in the day.
I don't know how they managed to get 28 million from him, because he didn't score a goal for Chelsea, did they? I suppose he was on loan.
He went to West Brom.
He was sick on loan.
And
he went to West Brom. He scored bags of goals. He scored a hat-trick against United last game of the season.
Fergie's last of a game.
Yeah, and then Everton were like, aye. Chelsea don't want him because he's not been very good there. I think he went back, he made two appearances for him in like 2014. And then they come in for 28 million, which was a very good purchase for Everton at the time.
Yeah, considering how many goals he scored, how many appearances, yeah, that's an absolute bargain. Like, but that is bad business, isn't it? Like Man United letting Pogba go on a free, then buying him back for what was it, like 80 million or something a couple of years ago.
I don't know, man.
Can
that be classed as bad business? Because Chelsea like have been notorious for it, and we've spoke about their sort of like recruitment regime and how it's kind of like. Like a manufacturer,
a production line.
A production line, that's it. So, like, they got players like Kevin De Bruyne, Torgan Hazard, that have, like, come through the Chelsea ranks. And, like, you know...
Mohamed Salah.
Oh, perfect, like, exactly, like yeah. the three perfect examples there that have gone on to be brilliant players. Nathan Ake, who went to Bournemouth on loan, then Bournemouth signing for, like... 15 million, and then Man City signing for God knows how much, and now he's, you know, basically going to be a starting centre back for him. But they're still profitable. Can you call it bad business decisions?
Well, here's me. Yeah, I criticise Arsenal week in week out for making safe decisions and not moving their ass when it comes to the transfer market. That's probably what I'd be like. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't want to pay well over the odds for players. But if you're Chelsea or City, you're not as interested in that financial stability because you've got endless wealth behind you. You can balance it out later, can't you? Really, like.
And it all gets balanced out with like merchandise and like, you know, other economic means, yeah, like, you know, sponsorships, and you sign the
money
biggest
laundering
players.
You know, the good stuff.
Money laundering, yeah. You, like, at the end of the day, like Roman Abramovich, yeah.
He ain't clean as a whistle, isn't
nah,
he?
So, you know, who knows how he's getting his financial money streams through the club. But,
same with the Saudi princes, man, you're telling me, like,
oh, that's the dodgiest.
You tell me, mate. I'm not levelling any accusations lest the fist of fury rain down on my head, but you know, you don't get to be a billionaire by being like squeaky clean, do you? Simple.
Bad business for them with the climate change stuff though in the papers this week.
Oh, so I didn't even see that, huh?
No, just the earth burning, isn't it? Oh, anyway, yeah. That's a topic for another podcast, isn't it? The earth's on its way out, basically.
Yeah.
So the more barons, like, you know what I mean? I don't know how long PhD is going to be lasting. Judgment Day's come in. The pale horse is coming. Is the pale horse, is that the disease or death?
That is hilarious, man.
All right, so who else? Tammy Abraham to Roma for 34 million.
Random as you like. I didn't realise Jose Mourinho was such a fan of Big Tammy.
34 million, like 34 million is getting...
Nothing,
really? It's a pocket change.
Like, right, wasn't Luis Figo...
No, you got a fiver. You know what I mean? You got a fiver.
Just dash him away for a quick 34 million for Luis Figo was the world record-breaking... signing fee for 30 million when he went from Barca to Real Madrid.
Like 2000, something
2000-ish.
Like that. 2000-ish. Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, I think when Beckham went from United to Real Madrid for 23 million, people were like, oh my God.
And then Ronaldo for 80 million. I thought it was 80 million from United to Real Madrid. That was it. Like transfer fees will never get bigger than that.
Yeah, yeah,
it was
nah. This is the upper ceiling. It's unsustainable for the game.
Yeah, exactly.
What a load of shite. Look at this, man. 115 for Lukaku. I mean, I think he's a sick player, don't get me wrong, but he ain't no Ronaldo, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and apparently he's going to become, you know, the highest player in terms of transfer fees, total transfer fees, somewhat close to 300 million for his total transfer fees across his career.
Is that like blitzing Nicolas Anelka? Is that the player?
Yeah, because he was a journeyman, wasn't he? Like, yeah. He used to rack up the agent fees. That's what half of it is, though, man. Like,
I know.
I bet you'll be Reno Maiola, whatever it is, man. Fat bastard. Honestly, fat, greedy bastard. And I bet you he's probably his agent as well.
He's just a fat, greedy bastard. Horrible. Yeah, well, look, that is half because they're trying to make the bag as well, man. We know the score, man. Money makes the world go round. That's it.
So that is pretty much it for the transfer fees. Right, so it's time for the quiz, mate. What are we going to call it? We need a name for it. We need to call it something.
Don't know. You put me on the spot there. But all I can think about is potential quiz answers that I don't even know that are coming yet. So
it's not going to be easy, man. I didn't try and make it easy for you. I did try and mix up the sports as well.
Okay.
So there is a technically boxing question in there. There's a football question in there. So I'm trying to mix it up. An Olympics question in there.
For the sake of brevity, should we put a time limit on each question?
Yeah, who's going to time it?
I've got my phone here. Did you say
30
seconds?
Yeah, 30 seconds has got to be it, hasn't it? All right, so question number one. Which former Everton and Manchester United player currently sits top of the goal scoring charts in the Chinese Super League for Shandong Taishan?
That is a rough question, man.
Are you going back probably 6 years ago? I think he played for United.
I'm just glaring at the time now. I can't stop looking at it.
Do you want any more clues? Last clue.
Yeah, go on, last clue. Go on.
Afro. Big hairy afro.
Fellaini. Marouane Fellaini. Whey! Great clue, man.
Just inside.
I was 1 second inside the thing then.
Top clue. All right, reset it. Question number two. This is a cricket one. In the light of talking about the 100 and how revolutionary it's been for getting young people into the game. So, hat-trick hero Imran Tahir, who managed to get a hat-trick, which is 3 successive wickets on Monday, to dismiss the final 3 batsmen of the Welsh Fire against Birmingham Phoenix on their way to a 93-run win. But how old is he?
13.
No.
No, I don't got no.
You just went straight for it, didn't you?
I thought I saw something about a 13-year-old cricket player this week. It just jumped to my mind. One down the toilet,
he's
man.
He's 42.
That's not that impressive, man. Come on.
That is impressive for a cricketer, isn't it?
More impressive to be 13.
42. Man. That's like...
I wouldn't be impressed if I saw a 42-year-old golfer, put it that way. Same kind of thing to me, man.
Yeah, 42-year-old golf. Nah, cricket's a bit more physical exertion going on in cricket than golf.
I'm not saying golf's not physically exerting, because when we went the driving range, and he threw my back out about 4 times. So
you got 1 out of 2. So this is question number 3, and this is a football one.
All right.
So this is an on this day question. So on this day in 2001, this very day, 20 years ago, Liverpool versus Man United, they faced off in the Charity Shield. What was the score? And I'll give you half a point if you can name any of the scorers.
Was the score 2-1?
Wow, it actually was.
Oh,
to
my
who?
God.
I'm gonna give you half a point either way.
Liverpool.
Yeah, it was 2-1 Liverpool. That is knowledge, man.
For one more.
That is knowledge. So can you get any of the goal scorers?
Michael Owen.
Michael Owen did score. That is naughty. How did you manage to do that?
Unreal.
That is unreal. Right, so you get a point and a half.
That is unreal.
Get a point and a half for that.
The 2-1's the most impressive bit about that.
Michael Owen scored Liverpool's second goal. Who scored for Man United?
Dwight York.
Rude Van Nistelrooy, but yeah.
That's fair. I've run out of momentum there.
I'm impressed. So I'd say it's 2.5 points after 3 questions.
Sweet, that's not bad.
You're killing me. I'm going to have a rough time next week trying to beat this. So number 4 is about the Olympics. So Syria only managed a single medal in this year's Olympics, a bronze going to Man Asad. In what sport did he achieve this?
I don't want to throw it straight out there like I did for question number 2.
I will give you. I'll give you a clue if you.
You gave me a good clue for Fellaini, so I won't abuse the generosity. Syria. Was it in the weightlifting?
Wow. Yeah.
Oh my god.
How on earth? You've either seen these before or what? Oh man, cheeky. Right, absolutely killing it. 3.5 out of 4.
That's what I thought happened with the 13-year-old cricket player. The thing just jumped into my head. So, is it a flick of a coin?
I thought this was going to be a tough one. I thought you could get one or two max.
That was pretty close to a guess, man, to be fair. And you did give me a good clue for the first one.
And now you've got the boxing one.
The pressure's on for this one.
So this is the pressure on, but this is a really tough one, I thought. I think you have to know it. Which British boxing champion this week claimed he had finally got round to finish the hit TV crime show Sopranos, but admitted he was extremely disappointed at the shitty ending?
I know this one.
Oh, you know it?
Yeah, Josh Taylor.
Ah, fucking hell! Yes! Oh my god, 4.5. Woo! The first time the quiz has been on, I'm not sure if anyone's ever going to...
If quizzing was the footy, I'd be going for 30 million easily, man.
I'm not sure if anyone's ever... We're never going to top that, I don't think.
In all fairness to you... You gave me a clue for one, and you gave me... There's question 3 in there, which has got 1.5 points.
Yeah, give you an extra half point.
You gave me an extra half point, so still 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5. Yeah, we'll get. So I mean, we'll call it 4 out of 5 then. Yeah,
yeah.
You cannot argue with that, mate. That is a great start to the quiz round.
So do you want me to ask the questions next week?
Yeah, you get five topical questions next week.
Yeah, I make sure during the last week as well, because I was thinking like sports is like quite wide reaching, and there's got to be some kind of parameters of the competition, man. So sweet. I'm happy with that.
So any listeners, if you did better than Jim, I would be very, very surprised on that, because that was absolute pure class.
I'm going to assume they're lying anyway, so it doesn't matter. Don't send your scores in. Just yeah, let me bask in my own glory.
There's no way. No, you never get 5 out of 5 of that, nobody.
But from to finish on the boxing for the quiz, gets us onto the combat sports bit. And you saw the video, didn't you, of Galal Yafai? And like, his brothers went to the airport and brought their mates with him.
I've seen it all. Like, I've seen the post fight stuff with his talking to his brother, and his brother's in tears and getting emotional. It was just brilliant, man. And it's so endearing to see that it's these lads born in Brum, and like, you know what I mean.
Come from nothing, apparently.
Immigrants, you know, Yemeni immigrants come over to Birmingham, and like, they're proper Brummies. And like, they embody everything about being from a working class city, but also they just seem like such a great family.
Yeah, they seem like they
love each other, man. It's wicked.
Really, man, really. Wicked. And it's like, obviously we're biased and that, but you got to big up Lauren Price as well. She's the only other boxer from the GB squad that took home a gold, and she's got her own story with like her granddad passed away, and like then her nan's comes. There's a lot of, obviously the element of success with the gold medal is what ropes us in initially to it, but obviously, we've all got a soft spot for
And this was the girl that, I'm going to let you eat your words, yeah, that you said potentially you thought she didn't have a chance of winning gold.
Well, I didn't say that, but pretty much. I said, like, I thought someone who was faster than her initial Mongolian opponent would cause her some serious problems. But the thing is, there was no one who got anywhere. No one got anywhere near it in terms of, I think as the tournament went on, she got better as well. I feel like there might have been a couple of, like, Olympic nerves at the beginning, but bouncing on the toes, in and out, just simple stuff, you know what I mean? And to be fair, the middleweight to women division isn't as stacked as, say, like, Galal's flyweight division is. But take nothing away from her, man. She just got better and better. She didn't look like she was going to lose a single round, really.
And you didn't need to be a rocket scientist to sort of, like, plan out Galal Yafai's tactics going into that final, did you? Like, because what has he done the best, like, this time? He's just gone out in that first round, blitzed people.
You called it, man, the week before.
Blitzkrieg, man, like, literally, yeah. Innit? Like, just go out there, like, honestly, put it on him. And then how difficult to come from that first round, say, 4 or 5, you know, 4-1 or 5-0 in terms of...
I think it was 5-0, to be fair.
Yeah, so yeah. You just can't recover from that in
the
first round.
And he knocked the lad down as well with a proper knockdown. It weren't no standing count. I know, as we've said loads of times, that doesn't necessarily impact the scores. But that was a great shot. And what a way to put doubt into your opponent's head, just knocking him down a minute into the contest. Got me emotional watching the whole thing, man.
And at the end of the day, the judges aren't robots, are they? So they know in the back of their mind. So when you come into maybe like a 3-2 split, and they have to make a decision about which way the last round's going. Oh, you knocked him down in the first round. Can I really give it to the opponent?
Yeah, and I think I was kind of aware of that in the third round, where the first time in the whole Olympics, I watched him stand off and box at a distance, land his left hand and roll out. You know what I mean? I never saw that from him before. So he knew he was 2 rounds up because they got open scoring anyway. So you can see how that affects the way they approach the fight. But fair play to them both, man. Congratulations to all of them, really. The silvers and bronzes throughout all that. And like Team GB overall, they just smashed it, didn't they? They got loads and loads of medals. I think they finished like 7th or 8th or something in the medal table, which is no mean feat, man. There's hundreds of countries in the Olympics.
Yeah, I think the best British boxing showing in 103 years, I think.
That's a great stat, that is. Can't put that on the quiz.
Could be wrong, but it's one of them. I must have saw it somewhere.
But last weekend as well, loads of world title action. Michael Conlon wins a version of the WBA featherweight title. I mean, the WBA is just a joke, isn't it, man? They've got interim, regular, super, do you know what I mean? They've got like at least 3 champions and everything, and Michael Conlon just claimed the lowest tier of that with a points win over TJ Dehaney. He got a 5th round knockdown, but I think it's the same crack with him, man. Like, ever since Rio 2016, he's gone to Adam Booth, David Hayes' old trainer, George Groves' old trainer, and like quite a cerebral approach, a lot of switch hitting, defensively competent, if not sometimes like quite astounding the way he avoids punches, but he just hasn't got that one shot knockout power, or at least enough power in a single shot to stop people really pouring it on him. I think that's going to be a problem at the top end. So especially against a fighter like Kid Galahad, he demolished Jazza Dickens for the IBF. I mean, switch hitting, so accurate. Just he was dictating everything in there, man. There was never a moment in that fight where he wasn't in control. And if it wasn't for the 10th round point deduction for stepping on Jazzy Dickens' toe, do you know what I mean? I think that's the only point Jazzy Dickens got, really, throughout the fight.
But is that like when you have an orthodox southpaw? Yeah. That happens quite a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's just one of those overly officious, I'd say. And then Jazzy Dickens retired in the 11th round. He took a hammering. They could have stopped that a few rounds before, to be fair. But it was unfortunate for Kid Galahad that he lost to Josh Warrington last year. And then Warrington gave up the title, and that's how he's got it. Because now there's always going to be that kind of question about, like, is he the prop?
Does he deserve to have it?
I thought he was unlucky not to get the decision against Warrington, but I can see how they gave it to Warrington. There's like a really messy fight. It was kind of like Joe Calzaghe, Bernard Hopkins, kind of mishmash of styles, horrible.
I think Kid Gala had another Yemeni immigrant, I think.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
So there seems to be a strong community of boxers.
Big up the Yemenis, man. But, I'm glad that he's got the recognition he deserves, really. And, a couple of hours after he won his title, he was on TalkSport arguing with Ben Davison, Lee Wood's trainer, talking about the propriety, the legitimacy of Lee Wood's belt, innit? That's not a proper world title. I've got a proper world title. And then when you think about what I've just said, he's inherited a vacant title against the man he lost the decision against. It rings a bit hollow, to be fair.
Yeah.
But, that's all gamesmanship and promotional talk, and they're all trying to edge an extra 50 grand out of each other when it comes to the negotiations and stuff. So it is what it is. But that's a nice little round robin situation there now. Kid Galahad, Lee Wood, and Josh Warrington. All of them, it's going to be sick, man. I hope they can make the fights. There's so many fights that just go unmade. You know what I mean? Which was a theme.
In all weight divisions, isn't it? Yeah.
And that was a theme for the UFC this weekend with Cyril Gane, Derek Lewis. Somehow, they're fighting for the UFC interim heavyweight title when before the match, Stipe Miocic is ranked as number one. Francis Ngannou, only fought in March. He's not injured. So this whole politicking nonsense has come straight into the forefront of the heavyweight division. Derek Lewis got made to look like he didn't belong in the octagon with Cyril Gane. It was a one-sided beatdown.
So I think UFC have fucked up big time there, really. I think, could they potentially have put Gane up against Miocic? Or Ngannou, maybe even Ngannou as well. He probably would have been. He's ready for Ngannou, isn't he?
Yeah.
The way he's fighting, he's incredible.
Don't get me wrong, man. As much as I love Stipe, and as much as he deserves his trilogy match with Ngannou, if you put him and Gane in right now, Gane will batter him. He's just too mobile, he's too big, he's got too much variety, too much power, and he's just too cool under the lights, man. Like what he did to Derek Lewis the other night. Lewis was looking for a way out from the second, as far as I could tell. That's easy for me to say. There's not some 245, 6'6" guy battering my front leg.
He looked gassed. He just looked gassed, man. He just didn't look like he had the reserves.
I think the feints were too much for him. I think at one point in the second round, Gane hit him with a clean jab. And then he was complaining about an eye poke. So that must have hurt him, for him to have that adverse reaction. And then in the third, when Gane eventually poured it on him, he did offer some retaliatory right hands, but that felt like instinct. And then he was nah, fuck this, man. I cannot be arsed to get battered by this massive geezer anymore. That's pretty much what it felt like.
He was dancing around
on his toes, not even breathing hard. And think about, there's no other fight for Gane there. He's already run through Dos Santos, Rozenstruik, Volkov, now Derek Lewis. And only Stipe and Ngannou remain. And as I said to you, I wouldn't want Stipe to have to fight him to get his trilogy match with Ngannou. I didn't think it was fair that he was going to have to potentially fight John Jones when he was moving up from light heavyweight.
How many belts you got in that heavyweight?
It's the two now. And that's what two. I think that's so what they're going to do.
He's got one and Ngannou.
They'll call it a unification match. And then everyone but wins except Stipe.
So Stipe gets frosted out again.
Absolutely shafted.
It's horrible, really.
Yeah, it's raving, man. Absolutely raving. But again, the fight to make. The two best heavyweights in the division, as far as I'm concerned, are Francis Ngannou, the champion proper, and Cyril Gane, the interim champion. And that's what they should make, man. Give it the proper build-up. They're not going to go to France or anything like that. They should go to France with that one. Because they're both,
Be wicked.
They're both at the same gym in Paris. Do you know what I mean? That's would be absolute. Yeah, PSG's stadium. That would be sick, man. Absolutely
messy
sick.
Messy front row tickets.
Oh, yeah, in the presidential box. But what was it on the card as well? So you had Vicente Luque got a dash choke against Michael Chiesa. Jose Aldo, Pedro Munhoz. I thought this was going to be a banger, but it was just a bit it was more Aldo solidifying his reputation as a bantamweight rather than putting on a spectacular performance. I think Pedro Munhoz holds a win over Cody Garbrandt, so he's no mug, do you know what I mean? But it was just there was none of the same firefighting passion I would have expected from two Brazilians. Now Aldo is calling out... He's just called out TJ Dillashaw. That's who he's just called out. And you know,
who's fucking nutter, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolute hard case as well. But he tweaked his knee and his shoulder. And he had that horrible cut against Corey Sanhagen.
Yeah, last time out.
And then there's Petr Yan. Then there's Aljamain Sterling. Like, bantamweight's on fire right now, man. Yeah. Aldo against all of them. And think about it, Aldo has only really got schooled by Max Holloway and Conor McGregor. Think about that, man. And he was like featherweight champ for about 10 years, going from WEC to the UFC. There are certain weight categories in the UFC that are just unbelievable. But one last fight from that card, which I'll advise anyone to go and watch because it was wicked, it is Rafael Fitsayev against Bobby Green.
Is he the Georgian? Is he Georgian or something?
Yeah,
I'm sure I read something.
He called out Hezbollah, you know, that like midget geezer, after the fight. He's like, he's taking everything I work for, Hezbollah. That Bobby Green, I've never seen him fight before. A really slick, like Michael Venom Page type, hands down, like slipping in between the shot. High risk, but really beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
And he was proper putting it on Fitsayev at the end of the fight. And I think one of the judges had it 30-27 to Fitsayev, which I don't know how you have that. But a really entertaining fight. I'm not sure how that stacks up at the welterweight rankings, but definitely worth checking out.
All right, wicked. So that's it.
1 hour and just gone over to 1 hour and 5 minutes.
Yeah, nice and succinct this week. Yeah,
we've done it, man. Absolutely. Is there anything else that jumped to mind?
What though, can you just chat about? Not really, no.
No, let's not. Because usually we say, let's cut it down to this time, then we go to like an hour and a half, and then we get annoyed.
Let's not waffle for another 15.
I'm happy to call it there, man. Sweet.
Yeah, sweet, man. See you next week.
Next week.